We're keeping you so safe, America. We're the FBI. But if you read the news, you do know, you do pay attention, you are aware of the simple fact that so much of these homegrown terror plots, this white Al-Qaeda BS, is literally just FBI informants and agents finding weak-minded people and convincing them that they are part of a plot to do some sort of damage and or destruction, etc. And they say, sure, we'll get you some rocket-propelled grenades and some C4. No problem. Just let's go blow up the St. James Bridge or, you know, whatever. We'll do it for Al-Qaeda. You have an intention. You would like to give material support to the Syrian, you know, whoever. Or the Afghan freedom fighters or the Yemeni, the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula or the Somali Islamic Union or whatever you'd like to give the, you don't know where to start. Well, we'll help you. We're the FBI. I mean, some people would just prefer the Cold War. It was easier to understand, folks. It was easier to understand. So they're trying to bring it back. They'd like for it to come back. All right. Well, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Your show sucks.
Oh, buddy. Come on. Where are you going to go? He's going to hang up. See, a Cold Warrior out there. He's upset. He liked the old ways of things. Show sucks, guy. Because I found this article that I think was originally published by WorldNet Daily. And we all know how WorldNet Daily people are, Joseph Farah and all those. It's, you know, we're talking about, we're getting a little Looney Tunes. But the headline of the article, Putin to put Russian bases in Latin America. Yes. Cold War's back, folks. Western Hemisphere left wide open by Obama's weakening policies. It's a pussy riot policy that Obama has of projecting Western power. As the world remains riveted on Moscow's annexation of the Crimea River Peninsula, Russian President Vladimir Putin is shifting gears to Latin America. Yeah, that's right. And it goes on. I mean, this article, the establishment of permanent Russian bases and a major Russian presence in the Western Hemisphere will challenge U.S. policies and threatens to diminish Washington's influence in the region. Yes, our influence, the United States military industrial complex's influence over South America and Central America. Yeah, we really have to worry about a Russian incursion into that. Now, Moscow will have a basis to stage offensive weapons in the Western Hemisphere, placing another formidable challenge to U.S. homeland defenses from potential missile threats. That's right. We don't worry about Al-Qaeda anymore and the fake Al-Qaeda summer camp jihad. Don't worry about that anymore. Let's concern ourselves with a missile gap and the Bay of something and a Cuban missile crisis. Well, not just a Cuban missile crisis, but a Nicaraguan missile crisis or a Venezuelan missile crisis. Aegis missiles launched either from U.S. Navy ships or from shore are capable of intercepting orbiting nuclear weapons, but the resulting high-altitude explosion could also cause an electromagnetic pulse event. Yeah, that's right. So, if Vladimir Putin, in his conquest of the entire world, were to stage a nuclear attack on the United States from his friendly location, this is projected to maybe be a possibility sometime in the future, Nicaragua, then we would use our military capabilities to shoot down that nuclear bomb and then, of course, electromagnetic pulse would knock out the vulnerable U.S. electrical grid system and other critical infrastructures that U.S. society depends upon. A catastrophic attack lasting months and years, furthermore, has the potential to kill up 90% of the U.S. population through starvation and lack of medical assistance. Even Obamacare can't save us from an EMP. Literally, that is the last paragraph in this World Net Daily article saying that Vladimir Putin, because the Obama administration is a bunch of pussy riots, that Vladimir Putin is going to destroy the United States, and that because of Obama's pussy riot policies, we might see a 90% reduction of the U.S. population through starvation and lack of medical assistance. Yeah, that's something to be really concerned about. You should be extremely concerned about it. So it's 5 minutes after the hour of one. The Show Sucks guy called. You can call too, 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. We'll be right back after this. Austin, Texas, finest, the Gourds, Moon Gone Down from Noble Creatures. 9 minutes after the hour of one, you can call 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. If you would like to discuss things with yours truly, or if you just want to give me constructive criticism and feedback in regards to the quality of this program. You can call up and go, your show sucks. Oh, mom, I gotta go, mom. Or dad, I gotta go. It's all good. It's all good. Show sucks guy has to turn in early. He has to listen with his pillow speaker as not to wake his mother. And he has to turn it up a little. She's a snorer. She snores loud, so he's got to keep. It's a fine balance. You don't want to wake up mom middle of the night listening to weird, oh, yeah, really weird radio in the middle of the night. Oh, and so not only is Russia going to threaten the United States with the possibility of a 90% reduction in our population, which it's kind of funny. Some people, and by some people I mean Henry Kissinger and the Koch brothers, they're probably totally cool with that, a 90% reduction through an electromagnetic pulse. I mean, this is such an amazing theoretical situation that has been developed by the thinkers, because they think hard, hard-thinking people at the World Net Daily. That because Obama's a big fat pussy riot in regards to his foreign policy, that Vladimir Putin's going to establish bases in the Western Hemisphere that will result in a 90% reduction in the U.S. population through a theoretical electromagnetic pulse that would starve us out and deprive us of medical assistance. I mean, it's good. It's good that the good thinkers at WorldNet Daily have finally been able to develop a way in which we will die from lack of medical attention due to something other than Obamacare, which is good, which is, I mean, it's good. We're maturing, we're growing up. It's a positive thing. So Obama, big fat pussy riot, we're gonna all die and stuff. It's not the only thing. I mean, there was clearly other effects that will take place from America's diminishing role in the world. And another one, it's already here. The end of the petrodollar. No, it's coming to an end because Russia wants it to be. This is the amazing thing about the United States and our position in this world, and the position of the United States government and the corporations in which it stands in this world, is that their power is flipping immense. It's real and it's big. I mean, it's huge. Russia, even though it has immense resources and it projects itself regionally, cannot fathom. I mean, you see this, you know, China, where it's the beginning of the yuan petro, the petro yuan. No, it's not. Until America's ready to cede economic power and authority to another entity. Because I don't know that you could have that happen just, you know, gradually or naturally. And what is the petrodollar? The petrodollar is a very simple concept, is that you need dollars to get petro. Petro means oil, that you can't have oil without dollars. If you are not Saudi Arabia and you do not have a bunch of domestic oil, if you need to import oil into your country, you need to have dollars to do so, because you can't do it with another currency. You can't take your yuan, which is the Chinese currency, or your euro, or your whatever, and convert that into infinity petroleum, as much petroleum as you want. You can't do it. You have to have American dollars to do so. Therefore, if you're China, or if you're, you know, any of these developing, if you're India, you need to have American dollars to buy your petroleum if you import this stuff. So it creates a demand for the American currency. This is why, and I've talked about this before and it needs to be said again, this is why the American dollar still has value. This is why the American dollar, there is demand for it. You know, supply and demand, that's what creates value for things. There's so much of a supply of American dollars. It's called the Federal Reserve. They've diminished and diluted the value of the dollar by inflating the amount of them in circulation. by printing more is called inflation. That's a simple concept. You inflate the currency by adding more of the currency into the economy. But even though the supply of American dollars is seemingly infinite, we're talking trillions and trillions of them, there is still demand for them in the world. And it's not the full faith and credit of the United States government that leaves that demand there. That's not what it is. It's a little bit deeper than that. As deep as you have to go to get some of that Texas tea, that black gold, as deep as that goes, you are not going – that system was developed after, you know, towards the end of World War II, ironically enough, in Crimea. I don't know how that works. In Yalta. Between Franklin Roosevelt, the Western powers, but specifically the royal family of Saudi Arabia. It was these – the groundwork was laid for this at Yalta, which is in Crimea, which is – incredibly ironic that we've come to a full historical circle jerk, which is generally what we do anyway, you know, if you're actually paying attention and understanding the current events as they take place. So you're not going to have some great existential threat to the United States. You can't. The United States, our economy and the military industrial complex of the corporations for which the United States ultimately stands, they've developed a system of power and influence and military control globally that cannot be just challenged simply by Vladimir Putin flexing his pec muscles. It doesn't work like that. It's a little more ingrained. It's a little bit deeper than that. We don't have to worry about Russian military bases in Nicaragua. We don't have to worry about them in Venezuela or Cuba either. That's not a concern to us, okay? Realistically, that is not even going to come close to being a balance of power to the American, the immense American influence that we have over the Western Hemisphere. Not a concern whatsoever. And you are not going to see the United States dollar cease being the reserve currency of the world and the petrodollar. You will not see that happen unless there is a big-ass war. And not just some little, you know, drone conflict or NATO peacekeeping mission. I mean a full-on, you're not going to remake the global order that has been established since the last really big-ass war, which is World War II. You're not going to see the global order remade because Vladimir Putin is flexing his chest muscles, because he's moving his pecs around. You're not going to, I mean, he can wrestle a bear, okay? He can do that. He can do what, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to think of all the fun animal activities that Vladimir Putin does. He could, you know, break a wild Mustang, okay? He can do that, but he can't just, you know, wave a magic wand. I don't care how much oil Russia has. They don't control the international infrastructure for the moving of that around. They have regional influence over Europe, but they do not have global influence like the United States of America has. And that is not going to be the global influence of the United States and our the energy, and the military, and this industrialized complex is not going to be challenged without a big-ass war. So look forward for that. Look forward for that. You don't have to, I mean, don't worry, folks. Reading all these articles, the rise of the petro yuan, it's not going to happen. It's not realistic. For the last 10 years, plus, since 9-11, you've been able to read, so we're looking at 13 damn years. Since 9-11, you've been able to read these stories constantly about how, you know, it's just a matter of time. It's coming to an end, this, that, and the other thing. Russia is not in a better position than the United States economically. It's not. China is not either. India is not either. I mean, these are not realities. With as many problems that one could find with the American government, the American economy, the collusion of corporatism and cronyism, an unbridled, monopolistic, fascist capitalism, even with all those limitations upon our so-called free markets. And that does not come close to demonstrating the sickness and the overall poor health of the economy of a country like China or Russia. I mean, literally, how much time have people spent being paranoid over China and the fact that China is on the ascendancy and it's a paper tiger turning into a flesh tiger and it's going to start projecting its power and this, that, and the other thing? China has grown at such a rapid and vapid pace that literally their cities are choked with smog to the point of apocalyptic proportions. Airpocalypse, they're calling it. It's insane. I mean, it's to the point where I don't understand how people in China aren't going flipping out completely. I mean, to the point where it's, you know, 15 stories above ground level, it is a, in some of these industrialized industrialized parts of China, it just seems like I stuttered. You know, these cities, Beijing being one of the primary ones, and all the other, I mean, there's 100 cities in China that have over 1 million people in them, where the smog and the pollution is so bad that it has literally choked out the sun. The sky is just pollution. It's just particulate. The environmental protection agency's own, you know, measurements and metrics for air pollution, you know, cannot be applied to the situation, you know, in the big cities in China because, you know, they don't measure it that much. I mean, it's the point at which I think that you would see, you know, industry come to a grinding halt in this country. And if people were, you know, if you had any type of, you know, popular perspective, any populism in regards to the air pollution in China, that I would imagine everyone would stop doing everything, shut down all the factories and just slow down. Let that stuff clear out because it is just disturbing. If you've not seen the images of this, probably the two most disturbing environmental images you could see would be an aerial shot of any big city in China and an aerial shot of the Alberta tar sands. And you'd have to, you know, maybe, just maybe, find a connection between these two things. The connection might not be so direct when you start, but you might find some direct reality here. I mean, China can't deal. China's got so many of its own economic issues, it's not ultimately a threat to the good old US of A. Just like Russia is not a threat to the good old US of A. We come back to the simple reality that the only entity that can threaten the United States of America, the country, we the people, etc., is the government itself. It's that simple, folks. Let's go to the phones. 816-931-5534. 931 KKFI, you're in a wind tunnel. Good morning. Good morning. We tried, though, didn't we? We tried to get you on the radio. We gave it a good shot. Somebody would like to call in. 816-931-5534. 931 KKFI. You should really do so. It's unfortunate. Talk radio was so much better when people called in on phones as opposed to cell phones. I mean, I understand. Things have changed. People use cell phones. Most people don't have actual phones anymore. But man, the quality of a phone call from an actual telephone line is amazing compared to what we've become accustomed to through our cell and smartphones. I don't have to worry so much about these simple realities. The only thing we have to fear here in America in regards to our future is ourselves. I mean, you know, the existential threat of terrorism or communism or whatever ism you want to choose is not as real to the simple, you know, to the simplicity that nasty old word, that nasty old F word has for us here in the United States. 816-931-5534-931. KKFI, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hi. Can I request a topic?
Sure, buddy. Hello?
I was curious what you guys thought about the postmodern feminist and the liberal academic war on science.
Postmodern feminism and the liberals' academic war on science. Hello?
Hello?
Hello. The postmodern liberal feminist war on science.
My service must suck right now. I'll try calling back some other time.
All right, please do, sir. I'd love to talk to you. Postmodern feminism. Which I'm not really sure what that means exactly. I'm not sure what postmodern feminism. I mean, what's a modern feminist? It's a postmodern feminist. And the liberals' attack upon science. Could we be talking about global warming? Is that what we're discussing here? Postmodern feminism. I don't know. Touchy subject, huh? Touchy subject is right. No, I don't know. I don't even know where to begin there. I'm hardly qualified to talk about postmodern. I like feminines. I like them feminines. Them feminisms. All kind of feminisms in my mind and thoughts. You know what I mean? Think about them feminisms. Postmodern feminisms, I don't even, are we postmodern? How many postmoderns, how many prefixes to our postmodernism? Can we just take a moment and remember modernity? Because now we're to the point of postmodernity, and, you know, it indicates that for whatever reason, the United States of America, as the cultural zeitgeist of the entire planet, continues on. That's 931-KKFI. If you'd like to call in, be very afraid. Be very afraid. That's exactly how you're supposed to feel. Anyone want to talk about what happened at the zoo last Tuesday? Anybody? The free day at the zoo? The freak out at the zoo? Anybody, should we wait a little bit to talk about that? I think that's probably the big story of this last week. That's weird. Not sure how that just happened. But I got to take another quick break here, I think. I'm starting to get paranoid. But it's about 1:30 in the morning. I'm Benjamin. This is the Paragon Radio program. The on-air studio is supposed to be full of people tonight, but it's just me. And I guess you should you should thank your lucky stars for that. Oh, there is somebody here. It's got me freaked out a little bit. Just a little bit. We'll play the spot. We'll be right back after this very brief message here on Community Radio in the 21st Century.
Attention local musicians. If you play rock, jazz, folk, bluegrass, hip-hop, Americana, reggae, world music, or blues like DC Bellamy here in the background, consider signing up your solo act or your band to the KKFI Band Auction this April. We will showcase your music for 30 minutes on our 100,000-watt radio station in exchange for a donation of a two-hour gig to the KKFI Band Auction. Intrigued? Call Bill at 816-994-7869. That's 816-994-7869.
Just got to lock the doors in case of attack, you know what I mean? Simple thing like that, 816-931-5534, that's 931-KKFI. I guess we've discussed the important stories of the week. We hit them. There was a landslide in Washington State. The death toll is up to 8. Searchers found 5 more bodies on Sunday in the tangled sludge of the massive landslide in rural Washington State, bringing the death toll to at least 8 from the wall of debris that swept through a small riverside community. A significant oil spill in Texas has closed the U.S. shipping channels that run along the Gulf Coast. No timetable has been set to reopen a major U.S. shipping channel after nearly 170,000 gallons of a tar-like oil spilled into the Texas waterway. But more help was being called in Monday to contain the spill and protect an important shorebird habitat. Just unfortunate. I mean, it truly is amazing that the Gulf of Mexico has any life living in it whatsoever. It just kind of speaks to the tenacity of life altogether. And I know that there are massive dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico. And if you really want to get serious about it, I mean, just like with all the talk that's been had about Malaysian Flight 370, and they keep finding large pieces of ocean floating debris. You know, they have these huge gyres. Gyres, we should get an actual definition of what a gyre is. I think it's a circulation of energy. In the ocean, you have these huge gyres to whirl, a spiral, a vortex. So you have these huge vortexes. A gyre in oceanography is a large system of rotating ocean currents, particularly those involved with large wind movements. Okay, so you have huge gyres in all the oceans. You know, the Pacific Ocean has several gyres because it's so dang big. So you have the huge moving ocean currents. Well, you know, they keep talking about these floating debris that are getting observed from satellite imagery. There was floating debris in the Indian Ocean, then there was floating debris south of Australia, and now the Chinese are saying they saw more floating debris. Well, the scary thing is that the oceans are full of floating debris. And these gyres, these rotating ocean currents, hold these massive patches of floating trash. And that they keep observing these huge chunks of something. But the scary thing is that the oceans of the world, I mean, the Pacific Garbage Patch, it's called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, is bigger than Texas. Yeah, it's bigger than Texas. It's a floating, circulating patch of garbage that's larger than the state of Texas. I love how Texas always gets referred to. I mean, because Texas is not a rotating patch of garbage. It's a static garbage patch. I'm just joking. Texas is a fine place, as long as I never have to visit there again. And all you people know what I'm saying. It's one of those concerns. You read these stories, you know, 170,000 gallons of tar-like oil, whatever that means, spilled into the Gulf of Mexico. To just go along with all the other spillage that has taken place throughout the entire bodies of water of the planet Earth is very disturbing. Very disturbing. And they talk about these huge objects that keep getting located because of the search efforts for Malaysian Flight 370, and we just need to accept that throughout the entirety of the oceans, there are massive patches of trash that are circulating around, I mean, bigger than the state of Texas, that are circulating around. And, you know, it's just, it's a sad but true reality as the oceans of the world get choked out with the great garbage patches. And they all have them now. I mean, just massive floating, gyrating, circulating patches of trash. Now, in the Gulf of Mexico, the dead zone that extends out from the terminus of the Mississippi River is from agricultural runoff. It's mostly nitrates that have choked the oxygen out of the water. that have led to massive die-offs and dead areas in the Gulf of Mexico. And, you know, 170,000 gallons of tar-like oil substance does not help that. Just like the Deepwater Horizon oil gusher, and I mean, was bad news. And hey, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, there's so much oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Some of it seeps up naturally. There's a lot of bacterial, microbial life that lives off that petroleum. That's fine. But it was really a lot of the chemicals that were used in the cleanup process that corrects it, these dispersants. There's disturbing realities there. A reason to get extremely paranoid about something that does not involve Vladimir Putin or fake Al-Qaeda summer camp jihad. There's not much other national news of worth or note. Who? Selling a poison by the barrel, liquid nicotine for e-cigarettes. Beneath cities, a decaying tangle of gas pipes. Leaks in pipes transporting natural gas are startlingly common. Federal records show, but replacing the network is a daunting task. Yeah. Crews work to contain oil barges leak. All right. So some of the simple stories of the goings on of the nation and the world. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. A couple other stories. An update on government-sponsored terrorism. The FBI agent who killed an associate of one of the Boston Marathon bombing suspects. I mean, this guy's going to be a suspect forever because he's dead. Tamerlan Tsarnaev, one of his associates, who was killed by an FBI agent during an hours-long interrogation in Florida, has been cleared of any criminal wrongdoing. Officials speaking on conditions of anonymity said State Attorney Jeff Ashton in Florida will not be bringing charges against the agent who shot Ibrahim Todashev, a 27-year-old mixed martial art fighter. The circumstances surrounding Todashev's death have remained mysterious. Officials initially said the man had lunged at an agent with a knife while the FBI agents and Massachusetts state troopers were questioning him about the friendship he had with suspected Boston Marathon bomber Tamerlan Tsarnaev. But now they say it's no longer clear what has happened, what did happen. They just know that whatever it was, the FBI agent did not criminally do anything wrong. That's what we do know. Nothing was done criminally wrong, which is, I mean, should be reassuring that the FBI did not execute this guy in a criminal fashion. The way the FBI executed this guy was completely consistent with FBI policy. So that's good to know. That's good to know. Todashev's father, Abdul Baki Todashev, insisted during a May news conference that his son was unarmed and maintained his son's innocence. He presented photographs, which the AP could not authenticate, showing his son was shot 6 times in the torso and once in the back of the head. The Washington Post first reported the prosecutor's decision. Ashton's office said in an emailed statement that he has not made a final decision regarding the investigation into Todashev's death and denied sharing any such decision with federal officials. The Justice Department has also been investigating, but has not yet released its own findings. A third law enforcement official said the Justice Department is expected to reach the same conclusion. Imagine that. The same conclusion. Federal prosecutors have said in court filings that Todashev named Tsarnaev as a participant in an earlier triple homicide in Massachusetts. They're trying to link Tamerlan to Tsar. Between the Chechens and the Ukrainians, I mean, can we just, let's find a people that we can deal with that have a little bit easier to pronounce names, please. So there was a triple homicide in Waltham, Massachusetts on September 11th, 2011. That was very bloody. It was something that did not make a whole lot of sense. The persons that were killed were involved in the drug trade. And while you do see from time to time people who are involved in the drug trade get killed and robbed, etc., these people got killed and did not get robbed. Their money and their drugs were left at the scene of the crime, and I believe the drugs were the marijuana that the people were selling that were killed was poured all over the dead bodies. It was a statement of protest against what was, you know, these dealers of drugs. In the case, three men were found in an apartment with their necks slit and their bodies reportedly covered with marijuana. One of the friends was a boxer and friend of Tamerlan Tsarnaev. The filing was prosecutors' attempt to block Zokar Tsarnaev from getting certain information from authorities, including investigative documents associated with the Waltham slayings. I mean, there's something to think about, is there not? I mean, it's just the fact that the FBI, I mean, this guy was cooperating with the FBI. This was not the first time they had met and talked, etc. And it's almost like he was killed to shut him up. That's really what it seems like, that he was murdered to keep him quiet. Which is very disturbing, because you would like to think that the United States government, when it prosecutes people that it accuses of terrorism, does so because it has evidence against them. Right? I mean, that should be the idea. That is the goal, is it not? You would like to think that when it prosecutes people who are accused, that it does so based upon evidence and not intimidation of witnesses and people who could potentially help the defense. You'd like to think that's the case. The article goes on to say, shootings by the FBI are almost never deemed unjustified, and the internal investigations into those shootings are typically not reviewed by outside agencies. FBI documents obtained by the New York Times under a Freedom of Information Act request last year showed that no FBI agents were found at fault in about 150 shootings between 1993 and 2011. I mean, the cops call it a thin blue line. I mean, the feds, I mean, between the Department of Justice, you know, FBI agents, I mean, are we really going to intimidate? I mean, not that it's the same thing with the FISA courts. How many times did the FISA courts reject a law enforcement or Department of Justice request to run wiretaps? I mean, out of 35,000 times, I mean, like 10. How many times the FISA courts did not rubber stamp requests from the Department of Justice? According to a criminal justice professor from the University of Nebraska, Omaha, named Samuel Walker, it is his opinion that the FBI is an insular organization because it's not part of the municipal police. There has been some real progress there in terms of post-incident review and shootings, but that's what does not happen with the FBI, and that's what he thinks needs to happen. The FBI is not part of that world. They think they are better. They are above that. They feel untouchable, is what he's saying. It's also very rare for any law enforcement officer to be charged with a crime in the shooting of a suspect. The standard is so high in terms of proving criminal intent. the executive director for the Council on American Islamic Relations Florida, CARE, which has been working with Todashev's family and conducting its own investigation, said that they want to see the details of Ashton's report. Hassan Shibley pointed out that Todashev's live-in girlfriend and others connected to the case have been deported since the shooting. The Department of Justice and the state's attorney investigations relied heavily on evidence gathered by the FBI, and the only person who can contradict their firsthand narrative is dead. I think that's kind of the idea, right? You won't get much of an argument from the dead guy. Not much of an argument at all. That story kind of dovetails with information in regards to overall crime in this country. I mean, believe it or not, crime is down. I mean, historically. FBI statistics, again, back with the FBI, shows that crime in the United States, including violent crime, has been trending steadily downward for years, falling almost 20% between the years of 1987 and 2011. The job of being a police officer has become safer, too, as the number of police killed by gunfire plunged to 33 last year, down from 50% reduction in the number of police killed in the line of duty since 2012. In just 2 years, been halved. It's at its lowest level. The number of police officers killed in the line of duty is at its lowest level since 1887, which is amazing in that this is not a per capita figure. We're talking about the raw numbers. Lowest level since 1887. That's back when the population of the United States was 75% less than it is today. But it's interesting because given the good news on crime, why are we watching the police departments of the United States becoming increasingly militarized when crime, believe it or not, is decreasing? According to the Justice Policy Institute, a non-for-profit group, shows that state and local spending on police has soared from $40 billion in 1982 to more than $100 billion in 2012. Adding in federal spending on law enforcement, including the FBI, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, the DEA, and much of the Homeland Security Department budget, as well as federal grants to state and local law enforcement, a lot of the money is simply pay and benefits, but the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics reports that the ranks of local and state law enforcement personnel alone swelled from 603,000 to 794,000 between 1992 and 2010. That's about two-thirds as many men and women as the entire active-duty U.S. military. What these statistics make clear is that policing in America is ramping up even as the crime rate is falling. But maybe there's a connection there, right? Certainly possible. What do you think? 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You're on the radio?
Yes.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are on the radio.
My name's Turbo Rains. I'm the president of Kansas City Normal.
Hell yeah, you are.
I was calling in regards to your statement about oil spills.
Sure.
You know, if we could totally get some total legalization, we could go towards the fuel, the hemp-based fuel that Henry Ford made in 1933.
Yeah.
And they would be, if we had fuel spills and oil spills with hemp, it would be fertilizer. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, but shouldn't,
instead of an eco-disaster like these oil spills are.
But, Turbo, shouldn't we be smoking the hemp oil as opposed to driving around in hemp oil cars? I mean, wouldn't we be better off smoking the stuff?
Truthfully, it doesn't matter. I mean, it serves so many different purposes that smoking is just just an added bonus. I mean,
there you go.
His Model T Ford was made out of hemp plastic. He made made a hemp plastic that was 10 times stronger than steel. The body was, the body of the car was made from a hemp plastic. Popular Mechanics reported on it in 1941.
Well, isn't it kind of exciting then to just kind of move in the direction that a lot of places are going? That why couldn't you go to Colorado and do this now? Why couldn't you go to Washington State and do this now? I mean, these places where hemp
Washington,
is...
Washington State's not a total legalization. Only Colorado and California have the total legalization.
Now, you got that, well, I mean, didn't Washington State, totally legalized, right? You can buy marijuana for recreational.
Patience.
No.
I thought it was just patients. I could be wrong.
I think you are, but that's okay. But let's just say Colorado. Why, what's stopping us? Let's move, man.
I agree. I totally agree.
Good.
And
so,
us being Missourians,
should we get on
the heart of America, I think we should.
Slow down there, pal. We can't use the words like that. But
sorry.
So should we start looking for roommates on Craigslist to move out to Colorado?
Well, there's several instances of parents. They did a study with marijuana on the CBDs, and it cures epilepsy. And there was a recent case here in Kansas City where the parents had to move to Colorado, so their daughter would stop having these epileptic fits. She went from 300 and something epileptic seizures a week to 2 with using the CBD cannabinoid
oil. Cannabinoid, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's been a long day.
So we can smoke it, we can put it in our fuel tanks, we could dress a salad with it, could we not?
I wouldn't see why not.
Yeah, I wouldn't see why not either. Why not? Let's move to Colorado and let's figure it out.
Let's get it legalized here in Missouri, and nobody has to move.
Well, let's be honest here. How long do you think before that will happen?
We're going to try for 2016. Kansas City Normal is making a huge push this year towards Senator Claire McCaskill and her opinions. So.
Yeah.
Everybody, stay tuned. Hopefully we can get some headway.
Hell yeah. Well, all right, man. We appreciate your phone call.
Thank you, sir.
You take
care
now. You too. Hell yeah. Why not? I think it's a long ways off. I don't want to be a negative Nancy here. I don't want to be a downer. But I think we're a long way off until we're going to have legal weed in Missouri. Should we? Of course we should. And all drugs should be legal, except for PCP. We've got to draw the line somewhere. We'll draw it at angel dust. But all drugs should be legal. And what does prohibition do? And nothing good for the people. It just gives law enforcement, you know, and the government an authority to lock your ass up and to manipulate your, you know, inalienables, those whole right things that you're supposed to have. But it's interesting because literally in the United States, where we incarcerate more than anyone else in the Western world, we also execute more than anyone else in the Western world. I mean, it's scary to think that so much of the prisons is just drug users. And you know what? The whole world's on drugs. Everyone's using them. There's this duality in America where you have these pharmaceutical drug users, you have these illegal street drug users, and now they're flipping. I mean, for the trend over the last 15, 20 years has been for people to use pharmaceutical drugs because there's an illusion that they're safe. I mean, it's to the point where people who are strung out, addicted to, junkies for pharmaceutical forms of opiates like OxyContin, codeine, which is synthetic heroin, are no longer able to purchase their synthetic heroin that they are addicted to. It's a real, heavy, hardcore addiction. And there's so much information about that, and there's so much that I think people know from personal experience in regards to these opiate addictions, and people have to switch to real heroin after they can no longer afford the OxyContin because it's not cheap. They go to real heroin. And now there's all these overdoses. This is generally an East Coast phenomenon now, but I know that there are, you know, heroin is getting popular from coast to coast again. And this is clearly has to have something to do with our incursion into Afghanistan. I mean, opium production, I guess I should say, in Afghanistan since we routed the Taliban out has just increased every single year. You have these problems with drugs, and one has to just accept that. I mean, not only, marijuana should not be a Schedule I narcotic, similar, you know, according to the federal government, with no medicinal use at all. I mean, heroin and cocaine have medicinal uses, according to the federal government, but marijuana doesn't, which is interesting. But it's these prohibitions that have really allowed for the, I mean, that was the initial manipulation and trampling of our inalienables was through the war on drugs, which has changed the way the criminal justice system works and has truly targeted an entire, you know, race and generation of people, otherwise known as black people in this country, which is really sad. Because at the same time that we saw the United States deindustrialize, we did see the United States become extremely strung out on drugs imported from other places, used to destroy communities and oppress and incarcerate peoples. But back to this story about how even though crime has continued to decrease in the United States, we're seeing a spike in the funding and the militarization of police. Are the two connected? Are we seeing crime decrease because of added police force and budget or other reasons? Because, you know, 40 years later after the reinstitution of the death penalty, people are finally starting to get deterred. Is that what it is? The death penalty and mandatory minimum sentencing is finally deterring criminals from criminalities. I don't think that's it. From this Defense Policy Institute report, SWAT team actions have soared from hundreds annually in the 1970s to thousands in the 1980s to 40,000. 40,000 SWAT actions since 2005. The author of the report and the academic experts studying the issues now estimate there are as many as 70 to 80,000 SWAT raids, SWAT team actions in 2013 alone. Hard figures are not available because the U.S. Department of Justice does not keep figures on SWAT team usage. But it's interesting. So are we to assume that the dramatic, I mean, over nearly a 20% reduction in violent crimes between 1987 and 2011, while we're watching a ballooning of police force payroll, personnel, and militarization. Are these two things connected? Or something else at play here? I mean, Freakonomics would tell you something different. Freakonomics would tell you that it's not the deterrent of the reinstitution of the death penalty that has caused a reversal in the violent crime trends. I mean, literally, America was a much more violent place in the early 70s than it is today. I know that might be difficult for some people to believe, but statistically, at least, it's true. Statistically, it's true. Is that because of the death penalty, or is that because of, you know, militarization and highly funded police departments? Or is it because what Freakonomic tells us, and it's because of the reversal of the ban on abortion, that Roe versus Wade, that potentially the worst thing that could happen to the crime rate in the United States of America would be a new ban on abortions. I mean, and this will be interesting. We won't know for 18 years because that's about how long it took after the end of the ban on abortions.